if you're up for it, I want to talk about, and actually maybe the New York Times cancellation subscription thing is an interesting launching point, the role of media and the role of like individuals in media, kind of the Ezra Klein stuff, and how we like see that evolving in politics. And I think like tech and gaming journalism is an interesting place to start. Are you up for this chat?
Tech and gaming journalism.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, actually, let me ask you a question first. I don't know.
Of course.
Like the New York Times thing, do you think your cancellation is a moment in time cancellation? Will you resubscribe?
I don't know. Maybe at some point. We'll see.
So it's like less a thematic reaction. It's more an individual incident.
I mean, it's kind of been a trend, but I think this is the straw that broke the camel's proverbial back.
In tech, and I think, you know, I think about gaming because gaming's had like such an interesting role with enthusiast media versus actual journalism, and tech has some of these same dynamics where it's like, what's the incentive of some of the publications versus the individuals who work at them? So, you know, what's the role of someone who worked at like a Kotaku or a 1UP? Sometimes they're reviewing a game, giving it a bad score. Sometimes they're covering something happening to an employee, but like 80% of the time, they're just enthusiasts with their fans.
Uh-huh.
And tech kind of has a similar thing with startups and broadly speaking, like the software industry, where publications like TechCrunch and The Verge and things like that will both cover the material, but also sometimes hold this role as like a hold power to account.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Never mind. Hold power to account. Oh, so sometimes they're covering it, sometimes they're being critical of it, you mean?
Exactly. And then we have this interesting thing happening in politics. I think it's a problematic already in gaming and tech, which is why I think it's interesting that I think the same thing is happening. Or maybe we're noticing it more, or maybe it's because there are so many digital publications, so it's like a proliferation, where we can't tell who is trying to make a research-backed case, who is trying to interrogate somebody, who is attempting to support the cause. This goes back to the conversation you originally had with Taylor, too, where you're like, you know, she's just saying, I'm a journalist. I could never do the things you're claiming I would do. It's like, what does that fucking mean? Like, we don't have a central certification of what a journalist is, and no one's watchdogging you.
Uh-huh.
So that's like the weird lines I see. I'm curious, just at a high level, again, I look at it being problematic in tech and gaming. It's a little more direct there because there's an economic incentive to cheerlead in that case because your fans do want you to cover the latest startup fundraise or cover the latest video game and have like a stream where you're playing the games with them or whatever back in the day, you know, like Giant Bomb and GameSpot and all that. There isn't the same thing in politics, except now there is, right? It's like cheerlead the cause. Does that feel like a theme that's happening to you?
I'm hearing the words that you're saying. I don't know if this is the issue. So you have science, which is like research and all these institutions that do, you know, whatever work, but like, you know, it's good work, but I don't know. Do we give a fuck about it? Like, am I going to read scientific papers? Probably not. And then you've got like pop culture and policies and politics and stuff that's like, this is in our face every day, and this is what's important because we see it on TV and we're talking about it. And in my mind, journalism is like kind of trying to marry these two ideas. So like, what's important? What are they, you know, and they decide what's important to talk about. And then how can we have like a critical understanding of what we need to talk about and then deliver it to you in an understandable way? This is like peak journalism at its best. We have, you know, President Bush says he wants to go to war with Iraq. This is the thing that everybody's talking about. Well, what kind of good analysis can I bring to that to make you understand when Bush says it, this is what he wants to do. Here are the facts presented in a digestible way, okay? If you run this game a million times, what happens is, let's say that, you know, you're trying to figure out like, well, why, you know, why does President Johnson want to go to war with Umbatistan or whatever? And you're trying to publish a piece, you don't know, and all of a sudden, the people opposite you are publishing pieces with a great deal of insight, and you find out it's because they have insiders that are confidential sources that are giving them, you know, parts of the story. Well, now you want to get your own confidential sources, so you might go to, you know, whatever organization, try to get leaks or whatever else, and I think at some point, you run into kind of like a perverse incentive where you sometimes have to be a little bit more favorable depending on who's leaking you information or who you're working with, sometimes openly than not. And if you're not willing to play ball with those people, you end up losing access to those sources, and then you just can't really function as a media entity or outlet. And so we wind up in this world where, you know, before I said that journalism is kind of marrying like the scientific critical approach thought or whatever with the kind of like, what is the pop culture populist of the day, to where it all just gravitates towards kind of the popular culture of the day. Because now you're just doing PR for these people, because if Sean Hannity wasn't as nice to Trump every time when Trump came on, Trump wouldn't go on Sean Hannity's show. He'd go on to a competitor show, and then nobody would know who Sean Hannity is. And that perverse incentive is really fucked.
Yeah, the access game, and this was like a huge deal in the first Trump term that I feel like has gone away this time for a variety of reasons. But the first term, I feel like that was a lot of like the Maggie Habermans of the world and stuff like that. It's like, okay, who knows him? Who talked to him back in the day when he just like took reporters' calls as, you know, kind of Trump's CEO or whatever?
Yeah. Oh, as a quick thing for gaming journalism especially, this was a huge issue because if you were a gaming journalist, right, what happens when a game gets released or whatever on day one? Well, the journalists release a full review of the game already or sometimes before that because of embargo dates, right? So if I want to be able to do reviews on a game, I have to agree to work with the publisher and to not post disparaging comments so that they give me an early copy so that once the embargo is lifted, everybody can publish the review, you know? Yeah.
Right. It's funny. Actually, way back in the day, like blogged about video games when I was in high school, and it was a popular enough blog that I was writing for that we got review copies for things. And so like I had contacts at Microsoft, and I remember like I reviewed some Xbox 360 game poorly. And I remember the person like messaged me, and it was awkward because she knew I was in high school. And it was just like this interesting scolding conversation. Not scolding, it wasn't rude, but it was kind of like holding me accountable. I was like, this is a strange interaction to be having and not necessarily what we intended to have as the back and forth.
Sure.
But that access thing is really important and interesting. So here's something, there's two pieces in tech that I think I wonder about, and I wonder if they have analogies. So the first is, so TechCrunch is one of the main publications that'll post about like startup fundraisers or launches of new go-to-market lines within bigger startups. And it functions a lot like a blog, but they'll also do journalistic pieces. So they'll do like things about CEOs. They'll do things about the venture capital firms and their behavior. But they're not journalists as much as like, I mean, they might call themselves journalists. And I actually think a lot of them have been really good or moved on to do really good journalism. But they're more like at desk journalists, I guess. Sometimes they'll get things wrong that I think the industry is right to be like, this is kind of ridiculous. So, for example, they'll report on a fundraise around a startup where they'll say, this company raised $10 million at this valuation, whatever else. And they'll get the number wrong as to whether it's pre-money or post-money, which is kind of like a way in which when you finance, you can have a valuation of a company and it's just about, you know, how you do the math.
Okay.
And when they get stuff like that wrong, or they'll say something wrong where like part of the financing will be debt, not equity based. And there's this moment where everyone's like, oh, you don't actually know how this works. Like you're blogging about this incorrectly. How punished do you think either the journalist or the publication should be for like industry terms being clearly misunderstood by individuals within their organization? Like what do you think happened? What do you think should happen to TechCrunch in that moment? They can obviously issue a correction. They can say nothing. They can not work with that journalist anymore. Or everyone can kind of give everyone a benefit of the doubt. What do you think is like the level of reaction the industry should have when that happens?
Okay, you're asking me a very specific question on some terms I don't think I fully understand.
Let me make an analogy.
If you fuck up something really bad, are you asking me like what should the law be, or just like culturally what should happen? Like heads should roll when you fuck up really important stories. Like people should probably be getting fired. But because they know that like the publication is going to lose all credibility if they don't hold people accountable for fucking up really important stories.
Because this happens all the time in these places. And I guess this is the interesting thing. I wonder how much it's happening in politics too. It's like, okay, the reporting we see, and you know, I think, this becomes like an, information hygiene thing, like a claim we made, a stat we made. This is why it's good to go to the primary sources, obviously. And I wonder how much we're like ignoring a bunch of this like low level, we like have an acceptance, I guess, for a set of facts not going through a filter. And we assume it does, and probably at the New York Times it does pretty often, especially for legal reasons. But often journalists are not as diligent and aren't as competent as the subject matter experts that they're interviewing. And I wonder what obligation they have. And then, like, we deal with the consequence.
I mean, I would say they have, they have a high level of obligation, no? Like,
but we don't hold them to any account today, right? I mean, like, that's the thing that I think is, like, the hard first part, is we don't reward people or hold them to accounts, like top end and bottom end.
You don't think we hold people if they get stories like completely wrong, or no. What do you mean by?
I'm like very much rounding or like estimating in my head, but like I broad estimate, 20% of like mainstream stories, I would guess, have something where the statement being made or the stat being cited shouldn't be stated or cited that way. Not necessarily like,
you think
20%? 20% of articles might have a statement of that kind. So not 20% of statements.
Okay.
Maybe that's high.
That feels kind of high. Yeah, that feels really high. Yeah. It also depends on what we mean by like incorrect. Like,
yeah.
If we say that like if a journalist publishes something and the journalist says something to the effect of, like, you know that this country is better than that country because their GDP is much higher. Like, would we count that as being like incorrect?
No, Well, this gets, I think, to the next piece of it, which is like we're now getting into cheerleading inside a lot of journalism, which has to do with that access game too, right? So now those statements are going to be made because they're either audience captured, I guess, or they have...
Or no, I'm just saying just from a purely factual perspective, like would we say that that statement is wrong? Like if they're using a number and they're just kind of interpreting it incorrectly, I guess. Because like, I guess I kind
of... It's
not
a lie.
Yeah, where I'm going is that like there's a lot of stuff where like you can be very nitpicky. So like sometimes when I'm reading articles or if somebody messes something up, you know, for a finest thing or whatever, like I'll say something like, this isn't like technically you could get more into this, but like I wouldn't necessarily consider it a lie. Whereas other times there's stuff where I'm like, this is just a total fucking lie.
Exactly.
So if somebody were to say something like, fuck me, I can't even think. Like wages have gone down, median wages have gone down since COVID ended or whatever. Like that's like statistically that's true, but it's only because during COVID all the lower like service workers lost their jobs, so the median wages were actually much, much, much higher. But that's kind of like fictitious because so much of the market dropped out at the bottom.
Right, they're not giving you the surrounding context that allow you to like.
So like stuff like that, when I see stuff like that, I get incredibly angry because especially because they're using numbers, like an average reader is never going to be able to sort through that. They're like an average reader will just never understand. I wouldn't expect them to. It's just not possible.
And so should we care that that happens often? And I guess like it's like how do we care? You know, how do we hold either people to account, or by the way, when they do that well, how do we reward them?
Well, I mean, ideally you reward people. I mean, if we're in our capitalist era, right, you reward people by hoping that they get the most subscriptions and the most people reading their stuff. And yeah, right.
Yeah, I guess, which is hard because right now, like the top Substacks, if we use Substacks, is like a useful thing because it's hard to like hold all of the New York Times accountable. Like, isn't like the top five are, I mean, it's an interesting stack, but like Andrew Tate's up there. So it's like, it's not rewarding the right mechanism right now. Well, so then it goes to, I guess that's one part of it is how do we, you know, kind of hold to account and or reward good behavior around context and I guess diligence around information related to the access game thing. Interesting, you know, kind of story in tech, broadly speaking. Kara Swisher, who you've seen with Scott
Galloway a lot, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. She used to be a kind of beat journalist for specific tech companies, mm-hmm. Wall Street Journal and other places. Then she built her own tech media brand. Now in this new Trump era with Oligarch Rise, she kind of didn't need to be a journalist anymore. She's more now, you know, commentator with her own media brands. And so she's kind of disconnected from that class of people. Most of them who aren't on her political native political side don't really talk to her anymore, perceive her as an enemy. And it's questionable as to what came first. Like if the venture capital class told the story, they'd probably say she got mean to them first. And then she would say, no, they got selfish first and their dynamic changed. But so she no longer, you know, kind of plays this access game, but takes the reputation with her. And now that she doesn't have the access game anymore, all we're getting is the cheerleading, if we want to call it that. How do you think about...
Wait, you think, like, she cheerleads now?
Well, she cheerleads on the opposite side. Now she's just, like... And I don't think in a bad way. I like Kara, but, like, she is very much...
Oh, like, adversarial to the startup.
Yes, super adversarial. Sure. Yeah. I mean, and rude, too, which is how she sells her brand, right? So I think it's intentional. It's not, like, mm-hmm. It's not like a quirk.
Yeah.
Like, but she launders, and I don't mean this, again, maliciously, but although I'm doing a lot of caveating for someone I probably shouldn't caveat for just because she's my tribe, but like, she launders her journalistic reputation and all of those past experiences. And sometimes I'm like, oh, there's no context being given to now her reflection. I agree with what she's trying to teach people about these people because now her podcast has kind of broken to the mainstream. But there's a lot of surrounding context that they don't know about what she's saying. And it comes with the authority of the voices she's had. And she still does like collabs and she has like a show on Santa and stuff like that, right? So she still gets to say, oh, I am this person or I was this person. I have this access. But now she doesn't need it anymore, so she gets to go full on in this cheerleader-adversary relationship. I mean, it's fine, it's her right, but like, what do you think about that? Like, how should we think about whether that's healthy, I guess?
I don't know. I feel like we're getting pretty deep down into this, and I don't know how... Like, when she says that she's, like, deep into things or she's got access, I don't think people are looking at her thinking, like, she's got personal connections anymore with these people. I think it's more that just that she's, like, very, very, very familiar with that world. So now that's why people trust her, and she generally gives informed takes on things as a result of that. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. No?
Yes, but then I guess it goes to like when we get to call ourselves journalists, like who gets to say it when? Like I guess this is one of the main quandaries now is like when do we expect you to be diligent, to have fact checkers, to...
Well, does she get anything wrong generally, or...?
Well, now it's just takes, so she can't really get anything wrong anymore, right? Because she's like, sure. I think they call this in journalism like second day versus like 0 day or first day reporting. Okay. It's like the day after. So you're now kind of inoculated, which I guess it means she's not getting anything wrong. But it does also mean... I guess, yeah, I don't have a problem with Kara specifically. And so I was bringing it up because I guess, like, this is the thing that I think is happening. It's like we no longer have a distinction between who's actively a journalist, who's actively kind of being held accountable. Everyone's kind of got a podcast and calls themselves whatever they want. Like, Taylor now has a YouTube channel where she gives good takes on things like Section 230, but it's clearly takes mixed in with reporting, right?
Sure.
I don't know what we do with all of that, because ultimately I think this means we... never come back to a place where like the institutions of a New York Times works, because everyone gets to, I mean, this is like the obvious problem. Everyone gets to call themselves a journalist whenever they want.
Yeah, I think that's a problem. I mean, this is one of the arguments I kind of make for like, I think journalism or journalists should be kind of maybe somehow make it a protected term. Like there's actually some bar of people that certifies people as journalists or something. And you can't just have anybody calling themselves a journalist because nobody even knows what that means anymore. Yeah.
And it's weird because you unsubscribe to New York Times because of an opinion person who like is laundering Hassan, so mm-hmm. like it makes sense. But at the same time, they're an opinion person, and I guess they consider that part of making their money, right, is like to have lifestyle. I don't think they'd have that otherwise. That's not like a journalistic endeavor. That article and that video, it's not like an editor in chief going, we need to investigate what Hassan thinks about shoplifting. Probably.
Sure, but I mean, what is that? I mean, like part of the money that. That goes towards the New York Times is for their opinion stuff, right? Like if they were to have an opinion piece with some person putting an opinion out on why they think, you know, raping women is okay, like I think it's okay to not support a publication.
No, I think
like
you're right
that.
To yeah. think to hold them accountable, but then it's how do you reward separate pieces? Because now we are in this
so
world.
I think this is a little bit of a different topic, but I understand what you're saying. Yeah. I said this in the past because Americans are too retarded to understand the difference. I don't think that, I should never shock these. I don't think that like media things like if you do the news, I don't think they should be allowed to have op-ed stuff or opinion anything. I think that should be a totally separate company because a lot of people, like if you were to ask somebody like what's the difference between like a reporter and a pundit, most Americans won't be able to answer that question, and they'll view somebody like Tucker Carlson as the same as like a reporter. Yep. Or like Sean Hannity. Yep. As like a reporter. Most Americans just don't know the difference, and that's not good. That's probably
one
super
Fox did that like in a weird way where they're like some of these shows are entertainment. They like literally have to like legally say that, I guess, right?
Yeah. Versus like sometimes news. Depending, yeah.
But then so this goes back to the analogy. This is interesting. Should we have felt the same? I don't really know again the state of it in games as much now. But now there's also tech journalism. Like they did both. And maybe that's why I thought that was like from a structural perspective interesting. Like the games publications, the 1UPs and the GameStops GameSpot back in the day did both. Was that always broken?
What do you mean did
both? Or was there something they're doing differently? They kind of did an op-ed and news and they were in the same publication and it kind of worked, I guess. I don't know why it worked or if it worked. I'm like reflecting on days that are long gone, but like
I don't know, I just don't think about this as much because like it's just video games, I guess. So I'm not I'm not like analyzing, I guess, the
in tech, it's a huge problem. So now you do see a bifurcation. So kind of what's happened is you have TechCrunch that will like report on fundraisers and kind of like facts, right? And they'll you know, take the PR package and rebundle it. Mm-hmm. So it's not pure company PR. Then you have a lot of those journalists have gone to publications. One of them is like The Information that does mostly like investigative work, tries to find information that the companies aren't providing from a straight perspective. And then you have enthusiasts, what I call enthusiast media, which is some of them have gone on to do like podcasts that are just about like cheerleading for, you know, the companies themselves, the founders. A lot of the venture capital firms will fund this enthusiast media sector. But it's kind of confused the tech audience because, and they're doing this on purpose somewhat, but everyone in the industry wants people to listen to the enthusiast media and not to the investigative journalists. And all the, you know, kind of density of views is now going to this enthusiast sector.
Yeah. I mean, that seems to be the trend that kind of happened in, I feel like, in reporting and media, right? Like most people got their news from pundits and not actual like news people. So you would read the pundits based, you'd read the pundits opinion based off of whatever the underlying news is, and you never engage with the actual news itself. A good example of this would be how popular people like Rush Limbaugh or Michael Savage were. These were never, they're not really news reporters. They're not doing any kind of journalism on their own. They're just pundits, but they were like the conservative voices. Or for the left growing up, it was It was Jon Stewart, right? Who's like a pundit, right. if that, right? Or comedian pundit guy. I think this has just always been the direction for American media for whatever reason.
But fuck, it's so boned because I look at the New York Times thing and I'm like, you know, I do want them to have, you know, the ability to have op-ed, or I think op-eds are interesting in some, you know, kind of form or function because it allowed, or typically in the past, it allowed outsiders to speak. That was the most interesting thing, I think, right? It's like the written op-ed from the subject matter expert who writes into the New York Times, has an editor then, you know, kind of help them build something that's nationally interesting. I think that's like the platonic ideal of the op-ed back in the day. But that's kind of gone, I guess, because now it's.
I just don't know why that role couldn't be filled by just like a dedicated entertainment type company or like a different company. Why does that have to be fulfilled? Why does that role need to be fulfilled by the same people?
Well, not from a revenue basis. They make their money on games. So this is the economic incentive because now.
Well, no, I'm just saying like in an idealistic version.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
Why does that have to be with the same company? I don't understand. I don't think it should have to be.
No, I think that's right. And because back in the day, the only reason is they already had distribution. Now it's because it's already tied together in the economic bundle. But in a platonic ideal, there's no good reason.
Yeah, that'd be my take.
But it sucks that, like, I think we're getting closer to not being able to unbundle, given that, like, New York Times apparently makes most of its money keeping people retained for video games. Or for, not video games, puzzle games.
Sure.
So, we can't really... I guess, like, the cat is out of the bag.
I mean, it could be... it could be stopped. It would just take, like, legislation to do it to break them apart, right? But it's more people, I don't think, would accept it. And do people you, get mega ass panned about it.
What do you think of, like, the... critique of the New York Times that it's like family owned, passed down, you know, kind of
from I don't generally care much about shit like that, but I don't
me neither from like I don't think it's caused bad behavior, but like so much of the tech right is now using that as a way to go like, oh, you guys want to say all these sorts of things about, you know, kind of our ownership, but look at this, you know, kind of where this comes from. It's a weak critique, but it's visually appealing. And I don't know if there are good counter arguments to the visual argument, right? It's kind of like,
I don't know. Yes, I don't know enough about it. I haven't seen it in before, so I wouldn't. I have no idea. Yeah.
Do you know what would make you resubscribe?
What?
Do you know what would make you resubscribe?
What?
Like, do you think you'd like? No, literally. Like, do you think like you'll do it when you see a change?
Oh, you're asking me. Oh, I don't know. I'm just tired of all the fucking lib bashing, and I feel like the New York Times has contributed quite a bit of it.
It's so fucking hard because it's how do you, as the New York Times, decide that you are reactive? And you know, you and I chatted about this when we were arguing about kind of your role in the Israel-Palestine conversation. Like, one of their arguments, if you challenge them for like platforming Hassan, would be they were being reactive to everybody else talking about Hassan.
Well, that's fine, but then they're just making a choice on whether or not they want to gain more of an audience somewhere and lose audience somewhere else, right? Like, that's always the choice you make when you're doing content, no?
Yeah, but I like everything else about the New York Times, right? I like their desk. I like the way they do fact-checking. I like the way that they do long-form content on politics. Like, it's so much of the bundle is the thing I would want to reward, right? It's like, I look at that bundle and I go,
yeah,
I don't want
that. That's
how
everything works. That's how it works, yeah, holistically, right? Until at some point somebody crosses a line, you're like, well, I can't. I mean, we make this decision for literally every single thing we do in life, right? If you buy a car,
I guess the thing I don't like about doing it in politics is like the on-off part of it, right? Is like, oh, if we turn off or support, same thing for like, you know, if we think about a political movement, if it dies during times when we're not excited about it, if it can't like persist its campaign or its primary principles, then it's not as strong in general, right? Like, you know, they don't get to have our revenue in the same way, then they're not going to build the great desk that does fact checking in the way we like. And if, you know, the Dems, you know, we like them in times we're excited about a presidential candidate, but we don't show up for the midterms, they don't get to continue the movement. And you're right, it's like how we're reacting to them and holding them accountable. But at the same time, again, I think a lot of these things benefit from being institutions as opposed to more roller coaster day to day.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's. I don't disagree with anything you're saying.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's always going to be a line, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Like, it's good that like a teacher can teach multiple subjects in school, and not you don't need to have an individual teacher for every single subject. Like, that's a good thing, but. I mean, at some point, there might be too many. That's not a great example. There might be too many subjects I teach, so it's not good anymore. I don't know. Like, it's fine.
But the
bundle
school
everything,
thing
that's
is
okay.
Useful because we subsidize, right? Like, every teacher subsidizes, or every high-value subject in a university subsidizes the low-value subjects.
Sure. But there's always going to be a line at some point, right? There has to be. There's always going to be a line, right? Like if you found there is going to be, I'm always going to use child rape as an example, right? If there's some soup kitchen that takes care of homeless people and blah 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 blah, but they power it all by selling, you know, videos of children getting raped, like, it's, oh well, fuck, I'm not going to support this entity anymore. And you would always say, well, but they've got so much good stuff bundled in with them. You say, yeah, maybe if it was just like smacking a child or slapping him across the face for $1 million, maybe, but like this is a line too far. That's going to be true with literally everything, right? You can bundle.
True, but like the same thing like with tenure universities, you wouldn't want. Unless that line was extreme, I guess it's like, should the line be really extreme for the institutions we really like? Like for a university, you have things like tenure for really, really unpopular professors, or, you know, in general, again, the subsidy of low value, even though the value of a major or of a master's degree in a subsector might change, you generally hold on to the institution, the people, the expertise, because you know that might change over time. And so like you're paying for, while you're paying for the institution to persist.
Yeah, sure.
And if a big line was crossed, you'd be like, no, obviously. And I guess like the question is the big line. And I haven't canceled my New York Times subscription because I like part of the bundle you have. And that's the part that I wonder if we get wrong a lot on the Dem side, right? It's like, and it's your same point that you always make of like the Republicans always go home when it's time for the election. And is there a, you know, kind of media version of that? And again, this is the only reason this is also true nowadays is because I think there's so few institutions in media. So it makes it harder to say no to a New York Times or to a Washington Post that might actually have the budget nowadays.
Hold on, was this, I feel like, hold on, okay, wait, was this entire conversation a waste of time? Is the whole conversation literally just about, like, was this thing over the line? I don't know what the point of anything else we just talked about was. Is that the whole...
now all the comments coming out, me having no point again.
What?
Because I
think, I'm pretty sure... conceptually, I'm pretty sure we agree on this, right? You agree that, like, there's a line. If tomorrow and the day after, every single New York Times op-ed poster, all the rest of their content was the same, but they started to do daily op-ed posts from the most violent IDF soldiers talking about their favorite way they've killed a Palestinian, I'm pretty sure at some point you would say, like, okay, well, fuck, I don't know if I can really support this publication anymore. And then you wouldn't accept all of the, well, you know, they produce a lot of other content, and maybe libs cancel stuff too much. You'd say, well, sure, maybe they do. Like, all those other things could be true, but there's still a line, and this line has been crossed for me now.
Yeah, I accept it. I guess, like, I do genuinely wonder. I'm going to use the New York Times as an example. Again, like, you like the New York Times a lot.
Generally, yeah.
Especially compared to alternatives, right? It's, like, probably top two. I don't know.
Sure.
And so, like,
maybe.
Do we support the... And maybe this has to do with, like, the overall conversation. As things move left, do we have to support more of this, like, left... Not necessarily individuals in it. And again, there's a line. But... is there a need for us to institutionally hold more space for people who fall, you know, kind of in categories we would typically not expect from the institution?
Do I mean, there might be. That would be like a thing that I would have to re-engage in the future, though, because my interest in engaging in politics would just disappear. So I would just unsubscribe from all new stuff and I just play video games. I would have much less.
Well, yeah, and that video in particular is like hard to even listen to. It's just like bad content at the highest level. So it kind of made the decision more obvious. But yeah, that kind of is that, you know, yes, that is my whole question is like where we draw the line and what we think the role is. And it goes back to the Ezra point. Like,
I feel like this is running into that question that I asked a while ago or yesterday or the day before, where you get into these conversations where people are acting like it's a degree of magnitude and what's too far, when I'm arguing that there's like a certain threshold that once you cross it, it's like in kind, philosophically, a different type of thing. Like all that conversation that we just had, this is why I said it was all a waste. I think you can have a really interesting conversation about like how much content would I support versus what would I not support. Like, I think you can have that conversation, but like, that video was just one thing and like a line of just like really, in my opinion, stupid, like fuck the left articles, like attacking the left articles that the New York Times has been involved in, especially on like a lot of the Gavin Newsom stuff. And I'm just not interested in that and consuming that, seeing that type of media anymore, which is very, very, very stupid to me. I don't like it. So like whatever the conversation topic is from, you know, that you were leading up to, I think the Hassan stuff and then like the, you know, Gavin Newsom and his team are homophobic and he hates trans people and all this shit. It's just like, I don't know. I'm good with that. I'd rather not.
Yeah. Well, it goes like I see that. And again, it goes to the question of Ezra Klein. Like, would you feel this about
Ezra Klein? I absolutely would not support in any way financially or whatever. If I wasn't that lazy, I would download Adblocker.
What do you hate Ezra Klein for? I haven't really read any of his articles, I guess.
Honest to God, it was the Ben Shapiro one. The Hassan stuff pushes me over, but like the Ben Shapiro one actually hurt me so much.
Sorry, one second. Klein, mind, you're a hater and you're a bitch. Sorry, continue.
Ezra Klein.
Every single thing that... I felt the pain of every loser fucking Destiny fan who's like, why is Destiny so nice to conservatives or whatever? All of them came screaming out in my soul listening to Ezra Klein just get unbelievably fucking cucked by Ben Shapiro on that. It was one of the worst conversations.
Did you watch the Scott Galloway?
Well, hold on. Do you have a same feeling about like the interview with Gavin Newsom that Ben did?
Not with Gavin Newsom that Ben Shapiro did on his show. Did we watch that whole one?
I don't remember.
I don't.
It's interesting. I don't remember.
Wait. There's an important question. I feel like that was okay, but there's a couple different things at play. One is Ezra Klein is supposed to be a journalist, like a critical journalist who's supposed to be critically analyzing things. Remember what I said before, like, you know, unifying like critical analysis with things that are important. And he did not have any of that critical analysis there. It was just completely defunct. Gavin Newsom's podcast fills a different role. I actually don't think that Newsom should have been trying to fill that role, but it was like, I'm trying to bridge both sides together. So when I think of like the conversation styles that I pointed out, those four conversation styles, all of the episodes that that Gavin Newsom are doing are in that like the second category of like friendly conversation. So they're trying to draw similarities to each other without like going super critical, but without necessarily saying like, oh, we're on the exact same team. But the Ezra Klein stuff, in my mind, that should have been like a challenging or critical one. It should have been challenging or critical, if not outright hostile, but at least challenging or critical. And it was almost like it was PR worthy to like same team thing, which I thought was just insane.
What's interesting, the Gavin one was also very tactical. It was like very like the Charlie Kirk and Steve Bannon ones in particular. He like would be trying to like meet in the middle, but he'd also be like, "How did you achieve this? Like, how did TPUSA?" It wasn't like, "Oh, let you give TPUSA."
Yeah, it was conversations I just don't know if Gavin Newsom is an elected leader who's like head poncho fighting Trump. I just don't know if Gavin Newsom should have been filling the role. I like the podcast and everything and the idea. I just don't know if Gavin Newsom should have been the person doing that. Yeah.
I feel like he should be more adversarial when he's bringing these people on, because it's how he's acting on Twitter and all of his like other campaigning, etc.
It was a weirder time, though. I mean, this was like before, because like the first episode was Charlie. I guess we were just coming off the loss, and again, it didn't need to be him, but we didn't know how bad it was all going to get quite yet.
Well, I think the issue is that and this is still kind of happening today, is remember, this was still back when, after the loss, everybody was having this conversation of like, Democrats need to engage in social media. Like, Democrats need to get on all these alternative media platforms. They need to have a bigger presence there. And then one of the things that came out from that was Gavin Newsom starting that podcast. And it was because that the whole Joe Rogan question and Kamala not going on enough podcasts, this was like looming in everybody's mind. That's also why Slotkin went on Breaking Points. And you saw Pete Buttigieg start to make the rounds more on shows and everything. Yeah.
But this is why I wonder, do we give more credit to Ezra for trying to be, and I'm not talking about the Ben, like, let's take their one-off incidents where he doesn't do his job, but, like, before, especially 2025, like, I think he viewed the way he was intellectual and did research in a conversation as a way to invite people either in his tent or adjacent to his tent to come give very long-form understandings as to their theories of the world. And again, like, maybe there's selections that he should go into the adversarial mode. But you're saying you would not give him dollars. You prefer ad block, right? So, like, you clearly think maybe even that role wasn't important. Or do you think that's still an important role?
It has to be done. It has to be engaged in with good faith. Like,
earnest effort, yeah.
Like...
But how do you get those people to sit? So this goes to the access game, right? The reason the access game exists and
oh, you
works
have to, I don't know, you
people.
Have to legislate against that, I guess. You have to find some way to ban it, yeah. Because otherwise,
none of these people. Far. Oh, so none of these people will talk to Kara Swisher anymore, right? Like the tech analogy for
sure,
this.
Yeah.
Now that she's gone,
I gave this example last night with Wick and the Sid guy that I was speaking with. That like people will check beforehand. They do this with me. They'll check beforehand to make sure that the conversation that is going to happen is going to be like a friendly, nice conversation, and it isn't going to be like a hardcore debate or anything.
So legislating against it, though, obviously, both would it happen and how do we even legislate against that? You'd force people. I guess you'd only use it in the public sphere.
That's a whole other different thing. But I mean, like, obviously, without that incentive destroyed, like, people are incentivized to just be cucked out in terms of media stuff, and then all of our media fucking sucks.
But I guess for Ezra, it worked until it didn't, and the only difference was the interlocutor was different, right?
Yeah, you have to function differently in different environments, right?
Yeah. Well, no, not if he, well, I wonder what he expected he was going to get in that conversation.
I don't know. Maybe he thinks he's still engaging with good faith people. I don't know. I feel like a lot of the mainstream world is just not really caught up to what MAGA has done and all of that. Yeah, it just doesn't seem like it. I don't think they understand. Yeah.
Sherman, why are you like so insistent on like advocating for like the civility politics? Like, go back to like the fucking softball combos.
Because I have a genuine belief that the so-called socialists, the quote-unquote socialists, the people we'd say aren't actually socialists that I keep referring to, are a very real and large and growing population, and they are part of now the large Democratic tent. And so if we take that seriously, if that's true, then we have to find ways to have room for them. That doesn't mean we have to have room for all of them, but you literally are seeing a movement of people who want to be part of the conversation, who are pushing the policies either slightly or a little bit to the left, who would be part of the tent. And this tent needs to vote for, you know, kind of one candidate when we eventually get to 2028. And I think we should find ways. It's not about, I don't need Destiny to become a cuck on the New York Times. You're an idiot. I need everybody, including you, including me, to understand that you can't hate all lefties, which, like, is nuanced when we talk about, okay, what's the role of the New York Times? How should they have the conversation? Who should Ezra talk to? How friendly should he be when he's talking to that person? All of this matters when we get to 2028.
I feel like I need to make, maybe I need to, after I beat this game, maybe I need to draw out like how far away I feel like the beliefs are. Because I just, again, this is like a magnitude versus in-kind thing. Like I just, like, you agree that childcare is really expensive in the United States, right?
Yep.
Right. Okay. Well, if I have, you know, a person who is willing to show up, babysit, you know, feed kids, do all this stuff, but he, you know, he fucks them every now and then, you would never hear this argument from me of like, sure, like maybe 10% of the time he fucks a kid, but like, don't we need help in childcare? Like, don't we need to expand the amount of people that are offering assistance to families in need? Like, isn't this a good thing economically? Like, do you not agree? You just agreed that childcare is a huge affordability thing in the United States, right? So I don't understand why you're trying to cut every single person you can, or I don't understand why you're trying to cut so many people out when I think that there might be a growing movement of, you know, child fuckers in the United States.
This is why I say it's a certain sector, right? It's a quote unquote socialist. They don't actually have these beliefs from an ideological or
like identity
perspective.
Yeah, but the problem is that you come in with the strong claim of like, you know, you've got these child fuckers that want to help with healthcare. And then afterwards, what I find out you mean by child fucker is the guys are all like 26, 27, and they really like fucking 19-year-olds. And it's like, okay, well, at that point, I mean, I guess I don't necessarily disagree.
Well, no, who do you,
so when you come in, so when you come in and you say that like, oh, well, no, I think there are all these socialists that are grabbable or whatever. And you're saying like, well, I'm talking about the people that watch Hassan, but not as live stream viewers. I'm talking about the people that might be on Instagram that identify as socialist. And some, and they'll see Hassan reels and they'll kind of agree with them, but they're not like hardcore socialists. Like, do you think that I think that all of those people should be excommunicado from every left Democrat?
No, but
party,
and we don't need to have this be about your strategy, but if we use your strategy as a talking point, I do think a lot of the content, this was what I was saying that first time, is uninviting to them, right? And then the question is, how do you invite them well? And so, you know, again, let's exclude Hassan. There's a whole bunch of other, you know, kind of more palatable folks. It's, is Ezra's role to have them on and have them, you know, kind of say their piece? Is Ezra's role to get the, some of the people who watch Ben Shapiro to listen, is like part of his, the reason he, you know, kind of does the access game, because he knows he then gets Ben on. He knows that some sector of Ben's audience is closer to the New York Times and politics, will watch and will pull that over to the big tent. Because we think about like third way politics and Bill Clinton and all this other stuff that used to happen when we created that big tent. I think part of it is like entryway, right? How do you invite the person to the conversation?
Yeah, but think about it this way. Think about the goal there. You're saying Ezra's goal is to grow his coalition, right?
To have everyone hear the person and to have some of the person hear the New York Times.
Sure. Why would Ben Shapiro agree to that interview?
Ben in particular, by the way, I think in some ways is confused.
Like, I don't know what that had to do. I mean, I'll ask you the question. Why would Ben Shapiro agree to that interview? If he knows that directionally the whole goal is for this person to try to cut away from my... to try to cut away from my coalition.
It's the same goal.
Okay, so that means one of these people is right and the other person is wrong in terms of...
No, aren't they just competing?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, unless they literally take five followers from each other exactly, one of them is going to be more correct in that assessment than the other, right?
Now, that's true, but by the way, the arena is still the thing they don't know, right? The unknown that both of them have is like, which of us will win the conversation? Or the moment, right? Like
maybe, but it has to be done. It has to be done. So when I engage in debate, right? So I'm like, so what I just said, I've said verbatim with about Fuentes in the past, right? And it's one of the things that Fuentes would cite afterwards for why I don't want to do content with me. He's like, well, Destiny says he wants to take people from my coalition or whatever, and Fuentes thinks he can take people from my coalition. But that's why our conversations necessarily have to be in the bottom two, the bottom half of, like, it has to be an aggressive adversarial conversation because we are diametrically opposed in terms of like where our fans. It can't be a fan of both of us unless you're just an aesthetic or whatever. Like, you're going to follow into one camp or the other. So if Ben Shapiro and Ezra Klein are both under the assumption that they're trying to pull people into their political movement, okay, but Ben Shapiro has a maneuvering advantage over Ezra Klein, and that Ben Shapiro can just has carte blanche to say the most retarded fucking shit in the world and Ezra Klein won't call him on it, then Ben Shapiro is getting the upper hand of Ezra Klein in their conversation. He has an advantage, a structural advantage of the combo going in that Ezra can't ever overcome.
It's interesting because you're right, but here's the thing that I think maybe Ezra is thinking, or maybe the New York Times is thinking, is Ezra is one part of that. So Ezra's the invitation. And that, I kind of think of the Ross guy as kind of how this is how they use him too. Ross, I don't know how to say his last name, Detat or whatever, the other, you know who I'm talking about, the bald guy?
I have no idea which. Oh, yes, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. He, like, even yesterday had Anthony Pompliano, who's just like a Bitcoin grifter, on to be like, Bitcoin evangelist tries to persuade me about Bitcoin. And it's like this, like, I think that's part of the role is like have them come to the conversation. The New York Times has a goal of like, we invite you so that, you know, we have access to you, we talk to you. I don't think they actually care about promoting or like talking to Anthony long term as much as they think
these are old tactics. They don't work anymore, right? So this is what I used to do. That's why every conversation I would have with somebody, the first one is always going to be kind of friendly, and then the next one is going to be more challenging. And the way that it used to work is I could usually get two or three challenging combos in after a friendly one, and then we'd be good. But now, like, people will cut you off after the first challenging one, or they won't even have the challenging combo. And that's what happened with my...
they'll just say, thanks for the friendly one.
Yeah, exactly. And then they got what you want. Like, so the question is going to be...
Mockler. Yeah.
Yep, 100%. And then the question will be, do you think that Ben Shapiro is going to go back to the New York Times to have a challenging conversation? That's my first question. Probably not, right?
Ben particularly, I think the answer could probably be not. Yes.
You think Ben will go to the New York Times and have a confrontational debate?
He would win them, though. That's the thing. He knows he would probably come away.
No, he wouldn't. Not if the other person knew that they had to have an actual debate and it wasn't there just
who at the New York Times, though, would out-debate Ben Shapiro?
Anybody. It's not even a matter. I'm sorry, but the Trump positions are not defensible now, unless you have somebody like Scott Galloway who's going to suck your dick, or Ezra Klein.
Well, I guess
if they got
like another commentator, then yes,
it literally can be anybody. You don't have to have a lot of skill to debate Ben Shapiro defending Donald Trump. Every answer he gives is absurd. I would agree.
Hold on, you don't think if Ben Shapiro had to fight a journalist about this?
No, he would lose every single time. What's the last adversarial conversation Ben has had with a journalist?
With a college kid?
Yeah. What, 5-10 years? How long has it been? So it was that one Neil guy or whatever, the British guy, right? When was the last conversation that Ben Shapiro had with a journalist?
What do we think about winning? What do we think about winning? Does winning mean he walks away having gotten his goal of laundering his views?
Or he was factually correct on things, but he can't be factually correct.
Okay, the second one I agree with you on. The second one, he can't be factually correct. I do think he could do aesthetically well enough to have one versus the New York Times.
This is a facts thing. It's not a concept anymore. You cannot come ahead on a Trump. You can't finish in the lead on a Trump debate aesthetically unless the other person is a cum slurper or functionally retarded. Or low function
He wouldn't straight up do Trump. You know that. He like does the weird thing that he always does of like...
Then you'd push him on it. He would be embarrassed. He'd be humiliated. It's not possible. I'm telling you.
Okay.
We just factually disagree. We're never going to resolve that disagreement. But
fair enough.
So that's my first question. Do you think he'll come back for a challenging debate? I don't think it'll ever happen. We'll see. I hope I'm wrong on that. We'll see.
Yep.
The second question was if you were a Ben Shapiro fan watching him on Ezra Klein... Did Ezra Klein give you things to think about?
No, and that's the point that I probably do agree with you on, is that the New York Times is beginning to miss...
Yeah, but
that.
If you were an Ezra Klein fan listening to Ben Shapiro,
yes. Yeah.
Did Ezra Klein's...
No, I think the Ben one is a bad instance. I do think... I don't know if I think Ezra's doing that all the time, though. I do think...
Yeah, I don't think he's necessarily doing it all the time, but I'm saying this is one of the worst interviews I've ever... It missed the mark on so many different things. This is like a horrible... That's why I'm using it as an example. I don't think if I thought every Ezra Klein interview was bad, I would never watch Ezra Klein, or I wouldn't have even known about it before.
But do we want him to continue to play that role, or is that role something we no longer want from the New York Times?
That role can't be played in this media environment when the other side... This has to be two-sided. right? That, like, one of the issues that I brought up before was the idea of, like, if you go into a debate, you have to know it's a debate. You can't, one side can't be expecting to debate. One side can't be showing up, you know, like Tucker Carlson, the other one's Ted Cruz, and you just get steamrolled. You're going to get fucked. Or Slotkin and Crystal Ball, you're going to get fucked. Or Ezra Klein and Ben Shapiro. Ben Shapiro was there to have Ezra Klein sandwash every single opinion, and Ezra Klein did it, you know, happily. I don't know if he just didn't understand the dynamic, what was going on. That's, you can't have that asymmetry there. They, both sides have to be playing the same game. And as soon as you start playing the same game, the conservatives aren't going to participate because they know that they can't win those combos. And then it's just a question of where our media environment goes after that. Do people want to watch real media, or do people want to watch algorithmically generated fucking slop like they seem to prefer right now? I think it's the latter, so you have to legislate against it.
And I guess this goes to like your Manosphere arc. It's like last time we chatted, you said they stopped inviting you, right?
Well, I wouldn't say for the Manosphere. I think the Manosphere just kind of fell apart. But for conservatives, yes, 100%. Okay. Yeah.
Do you like it? Could you have stopped them from not inviting? Like, is there?
By,
I don't know, like, the timing of all of this.
Agreeing to, like, kind of be gentler and play the game again? Yes.
100%. Or even just, like, pushing them in, I don't know, like, how personal the relationships get with some of them, of, like, you being able to be like, hey, come on, like, let's have the conversation.
No. No, because they know what's up. They're not going to agree to it now.
Because this is the thing that, like, I don't like the result of, oh, we have to just go into our own environments because we're all playing the role, because then...
Yes, I know. And I can't do anything to change that thing from you, and I can't do it. And that's why you guys are always going to lose this conversation, and you're just going to get raped over and over and over again.
No, you are.
I can't convey. I understand. I can't do it with Hutch. I can't do it with you. I can't do it with anybody. I don't know how to make you understand this, but your ability to walk up to these people over and over again and go, man, I just can't imagine doing the same thing they're doing, so I'm going to let them rape me over and over and over again because I can't conceive of any other world, is going to happen until the country fucking explodes. Like, the argument that you're giving me is the same argument that's given a million fucking times before. I don't know how to convince you out of it until you've lost everything in your life. I don't know what else to say or do. Right? I can't.
You want
to
take everything from my life?
No. Until you've lost everything. You're playing. It's a guy who's playing chicken with you over and over and over again, and you're like, well, I don't want to crash, and then you let them rape you and your entire family over and over again.
That's why I guess I'm saying what proactive.
Nothing. There's nothing you can do.
What proactive thing we do for the individual voters? Right?
Nothing. There's nothing we can do. We just have to be. If we just keep doing the moral high, whatever ground shit, whatever it is, eventually people are going to come back around, and they're going to know that we're in the right. That's we'd have to do, I think.
Wait, were you mocking me? Or was that?
Yes.
Yes to both?
Yes to mocking you.
Wait, but then I guess why aren't you more interested in new positive affirmative ideas for acquiring the socialist voters out of that crew more aggressively?
Well, I think you can do that. I think it's fine. But that is nothing, that is no bearing on any of the things that we were just talking about.
I think it's all an interplay, right? It's like the same question of, like, how do you talk about Israel-Palestine is an interplay on, do you invite people to the crowd? How you talk about the healthcare, the health insurance guy is a thing around how you invite people to the conversation. I think there has to be an entryway, right? Like, the first thing that has to happen, and yes, these current entryways might be flawed, but we need a new entryway.
You're talking 10 years ago. I agree there needs to be an entryway. The other side has realized that, and those entryways are not allowed to exist. They're not going to give you, you're sitting over here trying to figure out, like, how do we get in? They're going to say, as soon as they realize that's what you're trying to do, they're not going to talk to you. That's how it works now. There is no entryway. You're trying to solve a problem that I solved 7 years ago that there is no solution for anymore because they've realized they've figured out the game. There's no, it just, I just don't understand. There's like a tall guy in front of you and you're like, I'm going to punch him by going to walk behind him. And then you walk behind him and he turns around. And you're like, okay, well, I'm going to try to walk behind him again. And then he turns around and you're just like doing this a million fucking times. Give me an idea. Give me a single concrete idea and I'll tell you if it'll work or not. But I don't even think you're going to be able to think of one because you know that it doesn't work. You know that nobody does this anymore. I asked you, when was the last time Ben Shapiro, single you out. But like, when was the last time Ben Shapiro talked to a journalist, like, that actually gave him a confrontational adversarial interview? It was the last one that I can remember was that Neil dude from the British guy. That was humiliating. He got humiliated, and it wasn't even a hard interview. He just got fucking completely roughshod over.
Was it?
What was it? What?
Who was the guy? I don't know if I saw this.
It was Ben Shapiro and Neil, some other guy, and I think he thought that Neil was a conservative, or he's a conservative. So in Ben's mind,
I do remember this newscasty one. Yeah. Okay.
I don't remember the guy.
Andrew Neil.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah, and it was humiliating for him. And it wasn't even like that. It shouldn't have been that hard of a conversation. But like, you're trying to say, like, what is the opening? When the other side knows you have an opening, they're not defending their ideas on the merits anymore. Okay, you guys have to ditch that. They don't defend any of it on the merits. They defend it using the ecosystem and the rhetoric they've built. They're not trying to figure out, like, what can we do to try to make it so that it really doesn't look like Hassan Shakhta's dog. They're trying to make it so that every single person is carrying the same fucking lie, and it's said so much and algorithmically propagated so much or promulgated through all these people's feeds that that's it. That's the truth. That's the new reality. That's it. They're not thinking of, like, okay, like, how do I have to defend this point intellectually in a future debate? It's just like, if we just keep repeating the lie, everybody has to believe it, and that's it.
Well, I'm not so bothered by what you're saying. It's not like I'm saying, oh, we have to do the same thing and I want to spin in front of the tall guy or whatever analogy you're making. But I am going, something needs to change, right? Like the same set of things is not acquiring these people because the left is gaining a voice that, again, as much as you want to pretend I'm part of that group, I'm not, and I'm worried about that, right? But I go, we need a way to acquire the fans. I'm not saying it has to be through the entryway of engaging with these people in a way that allows them to launder their view, but we have to acknowledge their views winning, right? Like, what is happening right now? Most of the New York Times just did the shoplift piece, right? Like, that is a thing that just happened.
I mean, their view might be gaining some ground. I don't know if it's actually, like, in an electoral manner, like, winning in any substantial or significant way. But I do agree that it's gaining ground, and that's not good. But I mean, like, the only way that I ever see any of this changing fundamentally is if somehow the center-left realizes the way that the far-left and MAGA have figured out media to do it the same. So my small part in that is unsubbing from the New York Times, or they're going to sit here and play these patty cake games with people who want to see their entire movement destroyed.
Problem?
But if you have any other actionable, like reducible to like a real suggestion idea that you think isn't being considered, I mean, I'm glad to hear it, but I can't think of anything else besides I don't think you can win in this asymmetrical media environment using any kind of...
No, all of my ideas are small ideas around your particular, and I think you've mostly said you actually agree with them, of like some of your more aggressive entry points could be softer in an attempt to allow someone to listen to you, but that doesn't solve the problem. I don't have grand, like what our media shifts should be in from an infrastructure perspective. But I do think from an individual perspective, it is one of those things where the very few people we do have in the left of center do need to be more compelling from an entryway perspective. Like, they're just not in comparison. And we're fighting with people who have a far easier time because they're like, oh,
what do you mean by compelling,
or,
though?
Like, again, I'd say like a lot of the loser positions, the things that you called loser positions the other day, our first or second time talking, where like everything that you're saying is a loser position. It was about Israel-Palestine, but let's put that aside because you say other things are loser positions.
Give me 2 seconds. I'm just going to repeat the same thing I've said before, and I know it's a broken record, but like a position is just compelling when the algorithm is telling you it's compelling. That's it. In another world, if Hassan gives that exact same interview 5 years ago or an interview like that where he doesn't have every single far lefty dipshit fucking loser sucking him off on it, he would be universally castigated. And it would just be nonstop bullying. You would be watching that, and you don't even realize, I guess, how much of an effect the everybody else's reaction has on you. But you would be watching three of the most tip-tippy champagne socialists in the world talking about how they want to go loot from fucking Whole Foods, while the guy on the left was cutting exclusive contracts with a company owned by Bezos himself, making... I don't know if he was making more than $10 million a year at his best year. I don't know what the cash advances on those contracts were. I know that the cash advance on its own was probably in excess of seven figures, probably $1 million plus, not to mention any preferential ad revenue or anything else, right? And you're watching these bougie people talk, like, you would never be saying any of this. But because so many of them over there are all like circle jerking each other, saying, oh no, it's good, trust me, because the audience is laughing so much, you're like, oh, I think actually they are looking really good. Their messaging is really good. No, it's not. Their messaging is fucking horrible.
All of elite media, which we can define as like being mostly center left to center right, is not having that interview well. Like this is a bubble thing, right? Like my media bubble is not pleased with the Hassan interview. They're not maybe canceling the New York Times stuff, but every person, Noah Smith, Matt Iglesias, reporters at the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, all these individuals are dunking on that interview for the past several days. It's nonstop. It's kind of boring me at this point.
Well, I agree outside of Hassan's bubble. But then I don't know what you mean. I don't know what you mean when you just said didn't it look really good. I feel like you just gave a totally contradictory take there.
What did I say?
I thought you were arguing earlier that Hassan's interview and them doing it was the thing that looked really good because of the engagement or whatever.
To the New York Times?
Do you think that the interview that Hassan gave with the three of them on the couch talking about micro looting, do you think that was good for his side or bad for his side?
For Hassan's side, you're asking?
Yeah.
Neutral? Nothing?
Neutral?
I don't think that was persuasive. I don't think it said something new to his audience. I think the New York Times thought they were in.
I think that his audience and everybody on their side is going to see it as a good thing, and they're going to circle jerk it as such.
I don't think they gained more people.
They get a little bit more legitimacy being on the New York Times and everything. They get platforms run by a little bit larger. It helps a little bit. But like, I agree that outside of their circle, it's horrible. But again, you're evaluating these things on like what the media used to be like. You're trying to think of like, how do I convince people like outside of my circle to you know, have the intellectual rigor to blah 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 blah. But it's not. It's just about growing your media bubble. That's all the far left is trying to do. Like MAGA has done, is grow the media bubble and ensnare more and more and more and more people. And that's it. And if you get sucked into that, if if you were a New York Times person and, you know, you saw this thing by Hassan, you thought it was weird, and maybe you click on a Hassan tweet and you like one or two of them, and now you're sucked into watching Kyle Kuklinski and Crystal Sees the Future Ball and all these fucking retards and all their tweets, at some point you're like, oh, fuck, I actually, maybe this shit is true. Maybe every single Jew, I'm sorry, I mean, Zionist is like a bloodthirsty fucking murderer, and every single Palestinian is Martin Luther King and Nelson Mandela, and all of these things are completely and totally true, and I believe this, and the Democrats and the Republicans are the same and they're evil, right? You can get sucked into that very quickly. Much the same that people like Richard Anania got sucked into the fucking right-wing retard media bubble, and everybody else that got sucked into the MAGA, all the tech world and all these guys who are supposed to be smarties got sucked into the MAGA movement.
No, the tech world, by the way, is very different because they are purposefully getting sucked in because it aligns with their incentives, even if the aesthetics or the politics or their beliefs need to be discarded. I actually think that's like an extraordinarily conscious choice.
That might be true for some of the like higher up people, but I don't think that your average software engineer
They're still voting blue. For the most part, they're still voting blue. They watch the All In podcast because they have like a FOMO around tech, but they actually still vastly vote blue.
They don't watch other conservative media. I would be curious to see if their voting patterns have changed. I don't know if I would believe that all of these people...
I believe it went from like 2% to 10% like conservative.
Sure. I don't believe that all of these people were as blue as they were before, though, if they are tolerating the every single person at the top of their industry being an absolute
fucking dick suck. So that's interesting. I think they are. And I think this is unique to the tech industry, but I think this is a big thing that like was weird about the tech industry because I mentioned this to you in one of our calls. Project Maven was the Google walkout when Google tried to sign with the DoD. I think it was called Project Maven. There was a big walkout, lots of media attention, and it was, I think, when tech got the executive class got the most pissed off at labor power. It was like, holy shit, this is like a real thing.
Yeah,
and
but
they can't actually
manifest. I don't view that as a right versus left thing. That could just as easily be interpreted through this fucking sloppulous lens of like, I hate
but war my point was, by the way, like that's died because the tech industry's like kind of labor power has even though it's still a very wealthy and lucrative field to be in individually, the quit rate is really down. The amount of jobs is really low. Their belief that they have optionality, the individual worker class inside tech, has dropped dramatically. They no longer have an ability to kind of push back. They are more probably selfish than the average Democratic voter. And so, like, to your point, they're tolerating something that I actually think they really don't believe in. Again, most of them are going to be immigrants. Most of them are going to be people who grew up or are in cities that, you know, the surroundings around them, whether individuals or the their families back home, are in blue or, you know, again, bubbles abroad. They don't believe this stuff. They don't wind up watching.
Okay. I doubt they watch Ben Shapiro. I don't think they're watching Ben Shapiro.
Yeah. Or even Fox or whatever. Like, they are very progressive is a weird word now. They're coastal. They're extraordinarily coastal. But
I'm sure that, like, to some extent, like, I don't think these people are becoming, like, diehard conservatives. But I bet that around, like, a lot of, like, culture-related issues, they're more questioning than they were before, or they're like, well, I don't know how I felt about like lockdown or the vax, or like, well, I don't know. Maybe the whole
government is really fucked and Doge was kind of a good idea
because like, it's like those types of like undermining the government and the institution type.
But as soon as you tell them anything, by the way, they like discard it because they realize. So, okay, this is interesting. This is maybe one area where there is something actionable in a very big way. So I think that class of people doesn't know how to hold leadership accountable anymore, to not have like this sense of like, oh, do I tolerate, you know, kind of the VC class or all this stuff. And again, some of it is now turning into some infighting, but I do wish, and I don't, you know who's well set up to do this, that they were given more of a, education is a weird word, but like fight back against, you know, kind of this executive power again, or like know that labor collectively, like you're building the systems, you're building the AI models, you're building whatever, you can still have this walkouts you used to have, you can still, you know, send something in Slack, whatever else. That culture is gone from tech, except some of the top AI companies, because that's very political by nature. And I feel like if they were reminded, you'd have that media class, you know, venture class, all in all this other stuff, not be able to be as wild as it is. But I don't know that they have that confidence. And I think they should. I think the labor power is still there, not as it was, but they still are, at the end of the day, still necessary for the next, let's call it 3 to 10 years, before attempts to automate truly kind of succeed. But they have no idea what to do. Like, what do you do if you're an individual tech worker who works at, let's use a non-AI company, a Microsoft right now, but you feel your executive and all the executives they power with and all the media appearances they make are all an endorsement of a political ideology you don't want to be a part of. Like, you don't have anything actionable.
I don't know. I mean, like, how many of the... I don't know the demographics as well. I just can't say. I got, but, like, you don't think... Like, how many of these guys are, like, watching, like, Joe Rogan? Or consuming, like, that type of...
No.
None of them are? You don't think that's a very... You don't think that's that common?
Not at all. And I know this class very well. It's... No. They might...
Can we start referring to everything as a fucking class?
Your mom is my class.
A bucket? You know what my favorite is? Bucket that everyone loves?
Sure. I don't know. Like, a group of people. I know these people, this type of person... Not everything's a fucking donor class or whatever.
I just don't get... I honestly don't get... Like, I feel like the Biden years are, like, all emblematic of, like, everything you're trying to describe, and it literally just didn't work, and they would just attack, and now we're going to have the power, and, like, everything's, like, swinging our way, and, like...
Wait, what do you mean? What do you think was different about the Biden years, though?
I'm not going to be able to answer. Like, what are you going to say?
Like, the Biden years, that attack was on something that was becoming cool and chic. So, like, I mentioned this about the All-In podcast and, like, the tech class or the tech buckets. the way that all happened, because, again, if you watch the early episodes of the All-In podcast, it's a really good example. They hated Jan 6. They thought Trump was whatever. Like, they thought Trump should be in jail or impeached or whatever. Then, as their incentives change, they tried to get DeSantis to win the primary. It didn't work. They decide to back Trump. They began to make certain things uncool. And I do think there's this, like, counterculture thing to it, right? Which is, like, they started to say, oh, COVID wasn't as bad, and the school lockdowns were too long, and not everyone should have taken the vax. And, then it was about geopolitics eventually, right? And they delved into other topics. In other words, though, the difference in the Biden years is there's something they're fighting against to create what we are now dealing with. It wasn't like this. Like, if you listen to them during the Biden years, it was the beginning of making things uncool, but it was not overtly political at all.
Yeah, I don't really know what you said there, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, I know. You like to say that a lot. Why are you such a hater?
Yeah, I feel like you're advocating for something that just doesn't make sense. Like the Republicans aren't using the strategy of like being super civil with like liberals and like making liberals.
You think I want everyone to be civil? Why? Hold on. What do you think is wrong with the notion?
Because you're like here. You've been here for like I don't know how long.
I know you hate it. You hate how long I've been here. You are crying.
Your
skin is just so itchy.
Like, you just want it. You want him to, like, go back.
What do you
like
hate about the New York Times? Hey, chat, I want to tell you something. Sometimes you don't need to debate everything to the end point. I'm not here to do, like, gotchas on Steven. I also just want to talk about the theory of the world that we should have moving into 2026 and 2028. Same thing to you, Prime Mind. It doesn't always need to be the most dramatic argument. We have to have strategic discussions about what we do next. Anyway.
Sure, there's nothing strategic about going back to civilian politics when we literally did that before and it didn't work. Like,
when did we do that? Years. Name a time.
Biden is like the most like.
Name a time we had civility politics. Like, no, hold on. Not the president.
Everyone shit.
Not
on
the
him.
President.
The left shit on him.
Not the president.
Shit on him.
The rest of the polity. The media. The individual politicians. The Obama years were very confrontational. I think we have a weird brain about that. They're not this type of confrontation. But by the way, do you not remember all of Congress basically locking all of Republican Congress basically locking Biden down such that Obama down such that every Obama policy was contingent on like 1 to 3 swing voters?
But that was confrontational on the Republican end again.
Yeah.
But I think Prang's point was that like it seems like we're always having this conversation over and over again for like, how do we be more nice to bring more people in, or how do we be more opening to bring people
in?
Well,
I'm not saying nice to Republicans. I'm not saying be nice to Republicans. I'm saying there's now this young, big Democratic tent that includes a set of people who would call themselves these, you know, kind of
yeah, but this
Democratic
is a boring argument because literally nobody disagrees with you here. I don't disagree with you. You've watered down this to mean like the average Instagram like viewer. I agree that these people you should try to appeal to these people. Yeah.
We should try to appeal to the average Instagram viewer. I do agree with that.
Yeah, so do I.
The median voter is like a communist, like Marxist-Leninist?
No, I think they might see Hassan on their feed, but they do not call themselves a Marxist-Leninist. And if you poll these people, I've sent some of this stuff to Steve before. Like these people do not have views that are outside what the four of us would vote for. I don't know, but I've never
disagreed with that, so I don't know what the point is of digging back into that again. Yeah.
Nothing. I just like to.
I just feel like we're using the word strategic, and then it's like we gotta like open the tent.
What would you do? What would you do, Prime Mind? What's your three changes we should make in the next 6 to 18 months?
Because gas was more expensive.
What would you do in the next 6 to 18 months? What's your strategy?
My strategy?
Yeah.
It's basically we attack like the Republicans did. We attack Trump on Iran. We attack Trump on all his fucking crypto bullshit. We just attack fucking Trump and we win.
Basically. Okay, so then when you have a set of people who are picking between who would be the candidates be in this case, a progressive, a left progressive versus a left of center, how do you persuade them to be part of the left of center bucket? Or the traditional Democrat bucket? How do you convince them to vote and not view it as a, oh, it's stolen from Sanders. Oh, this is class warfare and this is the establishment Dems trying to pick Pete Buttigieg or Gavin Newsom, or even they'll do this with AOC now probably because AOC probably winds up being center or like the establishment candidate the way they're framing it, right? And by the way, I think that's bad. I think that's one of the things that's awful about them is they will do that to like AOC moving forward. So I don't like that, right? How do we fight that ahead of time? Because if we wind up in that fight, the same thing's going to happen that happened in the primary with Hillary and Bernie. It's going to be a fight that is very hard to argue because you have to defend establishment politics. You have to defend process and procedure. Whereas they're going to go off of something far more appealing, which is emotion in the sense that like we need change, right? So we have to get ahead of that game. Do you disagree with that?
So you're basically asking me, like, how do I make people who don't want to engage in electoral politics engage with electoral politics?
I don't think that's true. That's my difference. That's our difference. That's our difference, though, is I don't think it's true. I think they need to be part of the tent, and I think they want to be part of the tent. I think it's a great way to win a lot more. Not only do you win the presidential stronger, you probably win a lot more states. You hold more of this House. You have more of the Senate, and you get to pass more of your agenda. So I think it's like a very loser position to hold that the universe is not going to give you you know, the opportunity to win these people over.
I just don't think that like anything is meaningfully changing if we have like a president who like is like perfect on Israel-Palestine, and like this is gonna like somehow like we're gonna win the election because we get all of the left vote.
By the way, that's definitely gonna be a deal breaker issue for the Democratic primary. There's no way.
Yeah, I just don't believe it.
Whether that's something you like or not, there's no way the Democratic primary is going to be won by someone who isn't being.
Yeah, I mean, like obviously, if someone's like being like super soft on Israel, they're probably not going to be perceived well. But like I don't see a world in which like a person who isn't like advocating for a two-state solution is going to like be seen poorly.
I'm trying to think right now of like who in the Dems have made like the affirmative statements in either direction. Like AOC, obviously. But she's perceived well, broadly speaking. Gavin's kind of gone back and forth. I guess he like made a statement and then took it back, if I'm remembering correctly. What was that? Don't even remember? Steven, do you remember? He like did an interview where he...
He said it. I think initially he said it was a genocide and then he walked it back being a genocide, I think. Somebody can tell me if I'm wrong on that.
He apologized, right? That was the thing that leftists took issue with. He like said, I'm sorry or something. Gavin's maybe popular enough where maybe he survives being wishy-washy on that. I don't think other people survive being wishy-washy. Like, he got pummeled for saying sorry, whether he should
have
or not.
Why do you think we lost last election?
The Trump 2 election?
Yeah.
To be honest, I think it was the business class made it extremely uncool to dislike Trump. I think a lot of the voters, and you look at the crosstabs on this, that wind up being, you know, kind of where Trump got a lot of gains with college-educated folks, knowledge workers, things of that nature, are because a whole class of people... sane-washed a lot of the fringe ideas. It's like, oh, maybe, you know, kind of Trump's time for business wasn't so bad. Wasn't everyone making so much money? Oh, maybe we do need lower taxes and it's okay to otherwise have Trump in. He went on podcasts where like he said things pro-immigration. I mentioned this last stream, like he told the All In podcast that he thought it was a good idea to stamp a visa on every international college grad after their student visa as a way of saying, oh, he actually supports
people
in highly educated who are going to contribute to the economy. So they basically like equalized a lot of the dynamics that wound up, wound up all being kind of a lie. But I think that sane washing is what won them enough of the polity to win the election.
Sure, I would say that ADHD rant could just be summed up in one word, which would just be the economy.
What's your problem with ADHD?
Ooh.
I think the gish like the talking for like 30 million.
You don't like conversation. You just want to watch Mugenics. It's just Mugenics 24/7. That's what you want. Just Mugenics. Just more Mugenics.
Yes.
No, he's not even playing Ark Raiders.
This game fucking sucks ass.
Yes, and he clearly doesn't want something that takes more of his time. I don't know if that's the reason that he's playing this stupid thing.
Like the argument should advance instead of like fucking like circling around.
So advance it. I'm not stopping you from advancing the argument. I'm here. Advance it.
We're not going to win the election on fucking Israel-Palestine. We fucking lost the election because fucking COVID sucked ass. The economy was kind of fucking slow. And so everyone thought, you know, the Republican old ageism is like, oh, just bring a Republican in and he's going to fix the fucking economy. And he didn't.
Wait, let's
that.
Frame this. Let's frame this in an interesting way. Let's frame this in an interesting way, and maybe Stephen, you might be helpful in framing this. Do you think that
for the record, I don't know what we're talking about right now. I think this conversation has gone super off the rails. But go ahead. I'm just
maybe I'm restarting
content.
It a little bit. Do you think that there will be the Bernie Hillary left versus liberal fight in 2028's primary?
Yeah, it's gonna happen.
If you were to ask me to guess right now, my guess would be no. It's going to be another thing where what happens is because the left is so good at their media bullshit, the far left, is they're going to get into another position where they feel like, oh my God, the far left is actually insanely fucking popular. And then especially once those darn blacks start voting through the primaries, they're going to see that like, oh shit, nobody likes our candidate outside of online and we're losing again. And now we need to blame the DNC and everybody else.
Okay, so you think it's going to happen? It's just going to be reputational. It won't actually ruin the primary. That's what you're saying.
They're going to fall for it.
Well,
again,
the far left have gotten the media thing down. They're really good at that. They figured out what MAGA does there, but they haven't figured out that what MAGA does at the end of the day with their media thing is get them to vote for their candidates. The far left hasn't figured that part out yet, or maybe they're working on figuring that out. But until
they're
they get that,
they're getting better.
Part, oh, really?
I mean,
I guess you could argue that Zohran is not. Stop. I guess you could argue that the two biggest advancements right now maybe would be Plattner and would be the El Sayed guy. But I would need to dig more into both of those races.
Wait, why is Zohran not good evidence that they're getting better?
Because Zohran, because he ran his shit on his own. Zohran was never fucking propped up by the fucking far left and all these DSA losers or whatever the fuck. It was after he was like a serious fucking contender that race got way more fucking attention online. And then all of the people started to jump on board kind of afterwards. But no,
but they can still learn from him too, right? Like
what?
They're part of the same tribe. They'll learn from his strategies.
Maybe, but that's not. That's a totally different thing. That what he does versus what they do. But also keep in mind, like he was also set up pretty well, and that like Eric Adams was just a fucking everything was fucked there.
Awful.
And then he was against Cuomo, who Jesus Christ, I can't even believe that guy ran again. but not to take anything away from Zohran, but Zohran ran a really good campaign and did everything. But that definitely was not like an example of like, oh, the lefties are coming out and swinging hard and everything. Yeah.
So my view of it is I do think they're getting much better at this. And the challenge is I do think a lot of their politicians...
It'll be interesting to see where like Plattner and the El Sayed guy, especially the El Sayed guy...
Land. Yeah. But then even though... and I guess it's fine if it's some more like middle ground candidates who are more left are the candidate. That won't kill us if that's the president for 4 or 8 years. In fact, it might be good. But... I do think there's a chance that the person that like the left side of the crowd votes for is going to be far more polished than Bernie. Like Bernie was not a polished. I mean, other than the fact.
What do you mean by that?
Politics.
I feel like Bernie was quite polished.
He was rehearsed, but he like, and he's charismatic in his own way. But there, I think, I guess it's like what the polish for presidential is looking good to the national stage.
Bernie was the best that they had for that. Everybody else is a fucking. If that fucking
right.
If El Sayed right? had to run on the national stage, dude, there would be people lining up
awful,
to fucking execute this dude. And if fucking that Plattner guy with the Nazi tattoos, whoo, that's not a Democratic candidate.
Jeez.
Maybe as an independent or a Republican, maybe, but no shot. No shot. Bernie Sanders is probably the best that they had in terms of speaks well, appeals to a relatively broad set of people and everything else, but still wasn't enough to push it over the hump.
Yeah, I guess like the overall infrastructure is better, but I suppose that's right that the candidate won't necessarily get that much of an upgrade from it unless they're individually also really excellent. I mean, who would be the left candidate now?
I don't know if the left has a national level candidate, but remember, the left doesn't think about winning elections that way. This is why they keep screaming at like you need to appeal to us, you need to appeal to us, and it's never like, hey, well, here's a candidate that we've got, and we're going to push him because we think he's going to win. They never give us a candidate. It's always our candidates have to bend to them, and they don't even bother trying to fucking.
This is the worst habit, by the way. And again, maybe this is a different topic, and like my version of like wanting to get them to our overall political class is like a bad way to solve the problem I really have, which is I think that habit is. The actual thing that if it went away, I wouldn't mind how left they are, right? It's like the only thing I want is for it to be a conversation on the merits and just allow it to you know, kind of play out on the proper debate stages or whatever else and have everyone vote. If it wasn't for the fact that the other habit is exactly what you just described, it wouldn't be a problem. But the only way I see of fixing that is to have them in the tent. There's no way to like educate people out of that.
Sure, maybe, yeah.
Primine, what do you think?
What is he doing? Why is he killing
I don't think like, you, there's obviously some of these people who, like, have softer, like, they have, like, a soft commitment to the, like, leftist ideology, but, like, I don't really think this is, like, the group of people you should be trying to win over. I feel like you should be trying to win over people who, like, think that Biden was, like, worse on gas or something.
How would you fight Biden is worse on gas that you think Biden didn't do?
I mean, like, I thought, like, clearly we just saw, like Biden didn't, like, directly cause, like, he didn't directly
No, I know that. How would you fight it, though, right? Like, what's your, like, what do you think was the strategic campaign?
Well, we lost that fight, right? Like, that, like, it happened.
I'm aware of the outcome. What do you think?
I don't think there was, like, a way. I think that election was kind of cooked when.
No, but see, this is the problem I have with what you're saying. Like, they said that. They said that over and over and over and over again, right? Like, that was literally the campaign. Kamala's campaign, once it reared up, did the same exact thing. It was, you know, look at what we've given to you, and trying to counteract the claims being made by the other side on all the, let's call it, quote unquote, main street issues. That's literally
Biden
everything.
Biden did do it.
Biden Cinema. Did everything that they say he did.
He is the monster you think he is.
Like, that's literally the campaign strategy of the time, and it didn't work.
Well, yeah, it didn't work because the campaign was, like, a very hard campaign to run. It was, like, the last four fucking months she has to, like, completely. Like, we have to completely pivot to Kamala.
Yes, that's true. I buy into the theory that some of this is, like, life is life and weird situations are actually underrated in how they make everything bad. But at the same time, I don't think that means you don't prepare for it, right? It's like, that's why I think it's important. What is your issue with, though, you keep saying you don't think this is part of the crowd. You don't think it would have been helpful to have more of the Bernie crowd be more enthusiastic about Hillary going into the 2016 election? Wait, how old were you in the 2016 election?
I wasn't engaging it with this much.
I guess what's your... Well, this is interesting, actually.
Wait, hold on. Just as a quick thing, because you guys always say shit like this, and you never deal with the both sides of it. When people say, wouldn't it have been better for them to have had more of the Bernie voters or the left-leaning voters or the pro-Palestinian voters, you don't know the answer to that. Like, would it have been better to have more of those voters? Yes, but at what cost? Who's to say where the party would have moved depending on the position that you would have been required to take to appeal to those voters? Because it also assumes that the pro-Palestinian crowd was a crowd that ever could have been won by any position, let alone like an electable one. Because, I mean, you see the way they've reacted to every single thing that Kamala said, even when she was saying we need a ceasefire or anything like that. I don't know if she's a permanent ceasefire. But like every single comment got spun out of control and it didn't matter what the fuck she said on anything. So I don't know if there was any position that a candidate could have taken that would have gotten those people to support her.
I do see that. It's less so the support thing, and again, this is like they hopped on everything that happened during 2016. I don't think that can happen the same way to a non-Hillary candidate, because I think Hillary allows, because of her history, I'd vote for her even in 2008. But like, I think she, unfortunately, due to just being in politics for so long, allows a lot of kind of like claims that otherwise we wouldn't accept.
I don't know. Wait, what did this have to do with what I just said?
Because you said that like you don't know if there are statements, trades that... policy positions that she wouldn't have had to take that would have made it worse, right? That's your overall is...
Wait, I was talking about the pro-Palestinian... You meant Hillary for the Bernie crowd.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I think Hillary probably got all the Bernie crowd that she could. I think she basically...
Right, but I think part
of
that is a limitation because they could attack her uniquely, right? Because she's in politics for so long, so much more is up for grabs. You can attack her really aggressively. I think some of those attacks...
Are you talking about
for
Bernie Sanders?
Yeah.
A little, but the problem was that was the only time Bernie had control of his movement. So the attacks were not fucking unhinged.
That's also true.
So like there were, because people would argue the old Bernie people, if there are any of them even left that aren't fucking delusional socialist crazy types today, the old people would argue that actually some of the positions that Hillary was forced to take were a result of our successful pressure on her from the left, because I believe Hillary came out as a full supporter of the 15 an hour minimum wage federally. And I don't think she was at the beginning of that primary. And I think that's one of the things that the Bernie people take credit for.
Well, this is where I think in the primary in general, this would be helpful if we had a pre-baked platform, like the, was it Project 2025 or whatever the MAGA world came up with? Yeah. Because I don't think the in-campaign things help. They're a great reason to vote for normal Democrats, because a normal Democrat should say something like, I listen to the will of the people and I can even change my mind inside of a primary season. But the voter base never takes that well and will use it against you. And this is one of the reasons I wish there was like a Project 2025 for Dems being crafted, so that there was something that most people could debate before it happens. But I just don't know if that's actually going to happen for us.
Okay. I don't really know what you just said. I don't know if anybody else knows. Sorry, I'm retarded. No, actually, you're right. I don't know. I have no idea what. Okay.
Do you want to reset? I'll reset. I think it'd be bad if we go into 2028 and we have the same situation that you're talking about, which is an establishment candidate has multiple positions they either adjust to or change on the fly to respond to what the primary voters are saying, and they will get eaten alive for it the same way or not get credit for it.
No, I think that's fine. In the primary, you're supposed to be kind of sort of doing this now.
I don't think the voter base likes that, and so I wish we would have a Dem platform beforehand that most people can broadly ascribe to, the debate doesn't happen in primary.
I disagree with that. I feel like it's like expected that people are going to be part of your cabinet and everything that are like kind of running alongside you. I feel like that's kind of an expected thing, but I don't know. That would be my assumption.
Well, like if you think about I think the same thing happened in the 2008 primary, where like the Obama and Hillary were at each other, where like anytime she moved on anything or like tried to give, I can't remember like what the particular issues of the time, she was punished for being somebody who responded to like the will of the, and it's the same thing with like Obama on gay marriage, right? Like people use that as an attack now. It's like, oh, he was against it before he was for it.
I think you're thinking of, wasn't this a Republican primary thing? What election cycle was it? Was it 2008 or 12 when flip-flopper was like the go-to attack?
Oh
my God. It was the thing that everybody was fucking saying, flip-flopper.
No, that's John Kerry. That was 2004.
Was it Kerry? Was it 2004? Oh, maybe it was Kerry for 2004. Yeah. Oh my God. The flip-flopper thing. That was
the dumbest argument of all time. But I guess like that's the thing that I'm worried about is like we always punish our politicians for being responsive, especially in the Democratic Party.
Hmm. Okay.
Who are you?
Whoa!
Thank you, Steve.
I guess like I feel like you've had like these what? We've had like these like 4-hour combined convos, like the last two call-ins.
Yeah.
Like, what is like the general point that you're trying to communicate? Because I feel
let me use you as a way to talk to the YouTube comments and to GGG. What do you hate about them so much? What's your vibe? Why are you against conversation?
Ooh.
I'm not against conversation. I'm against.
You are 1,000%, and so is DG, and so are the YouTube comments. All of you are so begging for mugenics, and I want to know what is your problem with thoughtful conversation that is a mix of disagreement but also alignment. The finding
of conversations are interesting, at least.
Thank you, Mooten. And so do Josiah finds them interesting. There are a bunch of smart people in the crowd who find them interesting.
Ooh,
but the vast majority of you idiots. Just like wine. Oh, what? He sounds like Pisco. I was not here during, or I wasn't
really
as actively
sound like
watching.
Holy shit! Like you could be him on a voice changer or his brother. Your cadence.
You could be, yeah.
The cadence and
wait, what is it? Is it voice
cadence,
or pacer?
It's not
better,
voice. It's like
you're better
cadence.
At conversations.
Yeah.
I think
we're not saying that. Yeah, that's not an insult. It's just you just sound like him. Yeah.
Yeah, you sound. A little appreciate like that. Him, yeah. Are you from New York?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you're in Jersey. Sorry, yeah. I should be honest about it.
Same.
But I live in New York for the past.
They're the same people. I guess, people in New Jersey and people in New York are like the Arabs and the Jews that live in fucking Israel, and they're like, we're completely they're fucking 100%.
We're totally
but
different.
The New York natives would take that poorly in the
and
same
so
way.
Would
that,
so Jews would Jews and Arabs. So would they. You take somebody from Jersey or New York City, you throw them into fucking LA or San Francisco for a week, these guys are
going to
kill themselves completely.
This is just North Jersey, by the way. We did completely... both sides will say that Central and South Jersey are completely different species. They're more like Philadelphians. Wait, so, Brian, mind, do you have an answer?
I don't remember the question.
Why are you so mad at conversation?
Because it's like...
And why didn't you remember?
It's like super...
What's wrong with your brain?
Because it's super, like, drawn out for something that you can say, like...
What bothers you about it being drawn out?
Like, I had to come in here, and you're like, you guys are like you guys are
what
like...
What bothers
circling.
You?
It's
answer
like,
my
like
question.
You're
not answering. What bothers...
You're
so
driving around in a cul-de-sac. You're
do you think... Do you think circles are inherently bad things?
Circles, yeah.
Yeah, you're afraid of circles?
Circles.
I think circles make for a bad conversation.
Like, F1 races, they go around in tracks, and NASCAR, they do, like, literal circles. What's wrong with circles?
That's why they're boring.
But there's winners and losers now. They compete. You
yeah,
can go in a circle
fast,
and still...
Someone goes faster in the circle, but you go really, really slow in the circle.
Okay, what's wrong going slow?
Well, if you go slow, you take up all the call-in time.
Oh, wait, here's an... So what? No.
Well, we're not doing call-in today. It was just
also, there's like...
Randomly.
Yeah. And also, like, 5% of call-ins are good. So, you know.
Probably true, but yeah.
Ooh.
11%.
Wow, we're just
wait, hold on. Actually,
the whole community now. Okay.
They all hate me anyway, so it's fine. I love them, by the way. I love you all, and I get it. You guys are super mad that I'm taking time. What about Pisco was... Because, again, I watched back in the day, but I don't remember the fallout or, like, when it happened. Why does chat not like him anymore? Other than the... Sorry, the relationship part I get. That part I get.
Sometimes
I
it think. Feels like the arguments get super unnecessarily pedantic, I think, is the big issue.
Oh, yeah, that's not me.
You start arguing about what you're arguing about.
No, it's not me. Defend your... How am I pedantic?
Like, you're, like, arguing on, like, these micro points of, like, oh, like, there's, like, this, like...
That's different than being pedantic.
Like a communist, like...
I will now be pedantic and tell you that's different. Now that I will be pedantic.
But, like, he could be turned over. But, like, this and this and that. Like, you're, like, arguing over these, like, tiny little fucking distinctions that don't fucking matter at all.
They actually matter a tremendous amount. That's kind of the whole point.
Yeah.
Also, by the way, for whoever said that I sound like Mamdani in the chat, thank you. I'll take that. Well, you think the Democrats lost the election because people are pedants in the Democratic Party?
Yeah, we lost the election because we didn't appeal to the Hassan vote. That's why we lost the election.
Do you actually think that's what I think?
I think you're advocating for that, kind of.
What the fuck? Like, it's like nothing that I've said is that. That is like the dumbest synthesis. It means you're just not listening.
For, like, the civility politics where we, like, increase the fucking tent and, like, we, like, accept...
Do you not think we need to increase the fucking tent? Is that actually something you do not think, agree with?
No, I don't think so.
Someone asked how I address how the right won't concede or ever agree to anything on the left. When have I ever defended Republicans?
I think the tent needs to get more...
More?
Hold on. No. Not more people. I just think we need to get more cultish. And just
that's
like
true.
Anything they say, like, all right, we start running with it. Just like that's the fucking true. Republicans. Just fucking... We need to be more culty in the tent.
Damn.
This is why all the accusations of, like... dark money and other stuff. I'm like, let's have more dark money. Let's have, like, procedure. Until we get all money out, we need to have
the
really good workflows.
Yeah.
Yes, let's find. But, like, it's literally, I think, the thing they do the best on the right is literally all of that is people are paid to do it. It's not also they're not just cultish out of fandom. And what's her face? Ashley St. Clair. I don't know if you guys know who she is. She's one of Elon's...
She's a close personal friend of mine, actually, but yes, go ahead.
Wait, actually?
Don't worry about it.
Okay, I'm worried about it. But so she's doing a lot of posts now about Macworld and how, like, the influence and money works. It's not something surprising, but I think it's good evidence that way more of that was not out of any sense of passion. The cult needs to be assembled monetarily and, like, through process and employees, and we don't do that at all on the left because we think it's bad.
Do Dems have any, like, big movements? Like, I don't know, I guess, like, the Republicans,
Chorus.
They have, what's it called when they all go to Hungary and go do that? CPAC? Is that what it is?
Yeah, there's many of them in the Republican side. CPAC's one of them.
I don't know if
they don't usually do it in Hungary.
Any of them. I thought that they did it last year in Hungary, no?
I think you're right about that, but I think that's
okay,
one off.
But not usually?
Wrong.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought that they did it multiple times in Hungary. I might be wrong.
You might be right, but for some reason I feel like. But no, I don't think the Dems have anything like that. The closest you get are these little micro conferences, and I've attended some of them where, like, local operatives are invited, but none of that's publicized. None of it's meant to be publicized. It's kind of like the old version of democratic communication where everyone's too afraid to, like, say anything. They do it behind closed doors in workshops. Like, that's where I met Pete Buttigieg for the first time in 2016 at one of these things, but all of it was
this
behind
one
closed doors.
The reason that I liked Kamala's campaign is it felt like for once we were getting a campaign that was really excited about, like, being American and, like, coming together and stuff like that, but it just didn't seem to pan out, and I don't know if it's because she only had 100 odd days or whatever, but her campaign did actually pump me up. I don't know.
Well, I think we were talking so much about this is where, like, the Biden timing was particularly awful by even a few months. There was no ability to not be talking about the choice, right? Like, we were talking about the fact it switched to Kamala even while we're talking about anything else. Like, it was just so close that you couldn't stop having the Biden conversation. I think if you even had, like, 3 more months, even if we did it the exact same way, should we have had a primary or whatever, it doesn't matter. It was still just too close in time. So even if you felt pumped up one day, you still, the next day, we're still going to have a debate conversation on cable news about whether Biden should have swapped to somebody, whether primary should have happened. So always you were going to go downside after the upside.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Were you politically activated during 2016, Moon? Like, were you paying attention?
No, I mean, I was paying attention during 2016. I saw Hillary lose. I will say, in the voter booth, I voted for Hillary, but I wasn't fucking ecstatic to vote for her.
Because it's funny, I would say, like, the thing you said was also true, I think, for a lot of people in 2016. It was quite positive, but the problem was kind of the same thing.
I feel like she was cringe, and just, like, it felt so forced. Yeah. I don't know.
It goes to another conversation right away. It's like, oh, she's excited about America. She wants to give this positive vision, but then the commentary is going to be about something forced cringe, something from Bernie's crowd will, like, randomly throw a rock at her. Obviously, the Comey stuff. So, like, it's this undercut.
I also think she was she was kind of undone by her husband being a past president, and we just got off of the fucking Bush shit of, like, oh, okay, now it feels like a fucking dynasty. Like, we're just passing it from family to family.
Yeah.
Didn't like that.
Well, this is where I, like, it's so interesting. I don't know why they've just given up on politics. I don't know why, like, Jeb hasn't tried to, like, be more involved in the Republican Party now that it's changing. Or, like, Mitt Romney seems to have done 2 interviews in the past week. But I kind of want to see some of these old establishment Republican voices come back, because as much as, like, that was cringe, they've now gotten lots of separation from, you know, kind of a Republican Party of the past that
I think these people can survive in the current Republican Party.
Mac is going to be part of the big tent, but say it again.
I don't know who is going to be the king of MAGA after this, but I think that's where the Republican Party is going to be from now on.
I don't think it can be. I think that's dying. That's why I think there's maybe an opportunity for a Mitt Romney type or a Jeb. I don't think they'll take the opportunity. But
I think these people are too fucking, like, bought in to this shit.
But most of it's dying now, don't you think? I mean, we're seeing, like, the unraveling where there's infighting more than there is the cultishness that you're talking about.
I don't know. I mean, they're losing they're losing elections upcoming midterms, but
you now have enough of them talking about Tucker running because Tucker's, you know, kind of falling out of love with Trump. And so, like, you do see the splintering. I mean, it's not, so I guess I'm not saying it's going to look completely different to MAGA, right? Because if it's Tucker, then it's, like, just a different version of MAGA.
I think they're going to be crazy. Like, they're going to continue to be crazy. And
some sort of
loon
party.
Republicans of old days of, like, fiscally conservative people who, like, were able to have a debate with and whatnot, that is not coming back. You are only going to get crazy people in the Republican Party for a while, I feel like.
The question is, can they hold the energy? I think you're right for, like, some amount of time, but can they hold the energy without Trump? Because, like, no one else can hold that coalition together like he can. So even if for, like, 4 years they scramble trying to elect a new leader, it probably falls apart. Tucker's different, though, also.
I don't think so, is because they're so good at just coalescing around a person / an idea. And I don't know if it's just because Trump's at the top and it's all coming down. But, like, if they can find another quote-unquote king who's at the top, I think that these people will just coalesce around him, which is the scariest part. But we'll see.
Yeah, but here's the weird thing. Like, let's use Tucker as an example. I hate Tucker so much. The thing I will give him is he does have, like, a more consistent theory of the world, right? Like, his principles are more persistent over the years, when he's even, like, his crazier stuff. And so, unlike Trump, one of the ways Trump keeps MAGA together is it's kind of whiplash all the time, and he'll react to what's, you know, kind of hype or what he thinks needs to be said for the moment. I don't think, like, if a cult of personality forms around Tucker, it has to be because they like his politics, right? Like, his view
I don't
of
think they
geopolitics.
Care about the politics, man. I don't.
They care about the aesthetics of the politics, at least, I think, right?
I'll agree with that, yeah. They care about, like, the identity politics / the, a new word I learned, the populism behind it.
Right. Right. And so, like, I don't think if they do that with Tucker, it's MAGA. Because MAGA is more like a collection of very self-interested people hyped on single issues. Like, each person in MAGA is, like, most excited about something crazy. It's not coherent. It's like Trump is the coherence. I don't think Tucker is the same sort of coherence.
But I think Tucker would be even worse because he's just he's smarter about it.
I think that's the downfall of non-Trump movements. Because they're smarter about it, he can't pull that off. Like, part of what Trump pulls off is a lack of cohesion.
Well, I don't think Trump pulls it off. I think he stumbles through the lack of cohesion.
That's true.
Like, right now, we're currently having multiple cabinet levels officials have to get either, well, they're leaving or resigning, quote unquote. And I think that's what's plagued Trump's administration since his first term. Like, his first term, we were having a lot of cabinet officials, so much so that it was, like, I guess, never seen before.
So he survives all that. Yeah, imagine, though, Tucker does the same thing about changing
his geopolitics.
Yeah, but
Tucker's not going to have the issue. He's going to pick the right guys, and the guys, he's going to understand, like, they can't do everything that he wants.
No, I guess even we're going to an election. Think about, like, his geopolitics, because they're very consistent even if they're bad, right? So he's going to be like, oh, we shouldn't have any wars, we shouldn't give anyone aid, and we should be very isolationist, just, like, have absolutely nothing to do with anybody. People will come to him for that. If he betrays it, the coalition will die. And I guess you're saying he won't betray it. I don't think that ever really happens. Like,
no, I don't think he will. I don't think he will, for the most part, betray it. And then if he does have to betray it, there's going to be a reason, just like there was for the Iran war, that everyone's going to coalesce under and run with. I think that they're going to have a reason, and then they would run with it. Oh, we had to go to war because XYZ. Like, the Republicans, they're evil people, but I think that they're really good at, like, messaging. And the Dems need to learn.
That's 100% true. Yeah, I do think Tucker or J.D. Vance or whoever, like whoever's next, pretty much everyone but Trump, does switch more than we give credit for. I think normal politics is more whiplash than we give it credit for. And so, like, the challenge, I think, the reason that people are not as cult-like as Trump is because Trump doesn't switch. He just doesn't have anything he actually adheres to. He can switch at any time. He can switch his vibe. He can switch what he says.
I think
he
that's just
cared
Trump
about.
Doesn't believe in anything. Like, exactly. He doesn't actually believe in anything. Yeah,
exactly. But that's the advantage. I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, sure, I can agree with that. Yeah. But I think that Tucker will believe in something, and then he will do his best to push that forward, which is the scary part. And then
he will definitely, by the way, change the primary. If he runs even in the primary, even if he loses, he's going to define that platform because he's going to be very effective at communicating it. Like, he is dangerous as a communicator.
If Tucker runs, we got to get, fuck,
John
what's
Stewart.
His name?
John
yeah, we got to get John. John's got to run, too.
Meme
fuck,
election. Literally, just have them.
Yeah, if Tucker runs, John's got
to
run.
If Tucker runs, Steven has to run. Even just to be on, well, I guess it wouldn't be on the same debate stage.
Stewart's a populist? Sure, but, like, we need, I don't know. You got to fight fire with fire.
Stewart's a populist who could be persuaded. I hate how DG is also turning against Stewart. You guys are brain broken. You guys just, like, are so reactionary.
I mean, I think Stewart would be better than any Republican candidate, but he's not my ideal. Again, my ideal candidate.
Yeah,
I
want
before,
a real politician.
I don't care. Whoever is the most about accountability for fucking MAGA and what's happened in this administration / the first one, they got my fucking vote. So 100%. I don't care who it is.
What if it's Tucker? He doesn't like them anymore.
I mean, if he's talking about... No, never mind. I don't want to... We're on YouTube. Never mind. He might is the answer.
But this is, I think, the big issue, too, is if we do have the Tucker run, we have to be very careful as to who we pick as the other candidate. Like, I don't think, like Tucker Gavin's interesting. Tucker AOC is probably also interesting. But, like, Tucker Ossoff, I don't know if, like, Ossoff has the personality, like, there needs to be a personality against Tucker.
Yeah, it's gonna be Newsom.
You think it's gonna be Newsom?
Yeah, I think so.
Just say why you really don't like Ossoff. It's okay. You're among friends here.
Jew.
I like Ossoff.
There we go.
I just said he's not gonna
my
be
favorite person
Tucker.
Right now is probably Andy Beshear, the guy who won Kentucky. It seems
he
really
doesn't
interesting.
Have enough of personality either, though.
Well, I don't think he has a personality to, like, debate Tucker, but
yeah.
I think that he's probably, like, the best Democrat candidate. Maybe Josh Shapiro, because it's Pennsylvania. I think the Dems need to really think about the swing states. Yeah, that's fine.
No, but by the way, I do think this is, like, the Shapiro thing, I don't think he'd be good against Tucker because he's too formal. Like, he would do well probably against a J.D. Vance.
I don't think Tucker makes it out of the primary, the Republican
That's hopefully
primary,
true. Though. I guess we don't know who's going to run in that primary yet.
I mean,
other than Vance.
The top three is probably Vance, Rubio.
I don't think Rubio runs because I think they'll agree to not run at the same time. Probably.
I think the Jim guy will run. Jim Jordan.
Jesus.
Yep. But if it's JD Vance, does Tucker run? Probably not.
Probably not.
They're semi-aligned.
Donald Trump Jr., that would be cringe.
DeSantis will lose if he runs again. That guy has just lost all aura.
He has no aura. Yeah, I agree with you there.
Who did you just say is going to run?
Someone in chat said Donald Trump Jr.
No fucking way. That guy's going to try, and he's going to do, like, business shit, and it's just not going to work. I mean, he's also going to go to jail because that should be the number one agenda item of any Dem. Sure. There's absolutely zero way that I think Trump gets any, Jr. gets any sort of... He might become governor of some state, like the way, what's-her-face did, Sarah Huckabee Jr. Ugh. But I don't think he has, like, a real career after this. It just has absolutely no...
But on a Newsom ticket, who would be VP?
Please God, Shapiro or something. But I think that Mark Kelly is an interesting guy, too, especially with him mm-hmm. getting tried against by Hegseth. I think that's a really interesting thing for people to rally around.
But I think if it's Newsom, you probably want... I don't know if, like, what's the vibe you're looking to match? You have someone who's aggressive, has a personality, is charismatic.
You need someone just as aggressive.
Or do you need a wonk? Do you need, like, the person who seems they're going to stand, like, and do the homework?
Oh, I want another person, like... But I don't think you'll ever get another Biden.
Oh, like a cheerleader
king
type.
Of Congress. No, I would say it seems like he was, like, very, very good procedural. At, like, making deals in Congress. Yeah.
Right. Although there's no one that's really like that anymore. Well, I guess there are, like, it's like the Cory Bookers of the world who just have a lot of relationships. But none of them are as reputationally cross-party the way Biden was. Because that was also seen as the strength of the times. He's going to be useful for getting Republicans to vote for bipartisan bills.
Pelosi gets up there and get a corpse.
I think we should put Hillary in the VP spot. Let's just have, like, a revenge enthusiasm. She deserves it.
True. I don't think she'd do it. But I would be down for it.
No, she wouldn't. I think she... I mean... She must be tired. Also, she knows how much hate she
How old is she now?
She's old.
Not too old.
She is 78. Okay. Another rule that I got. You can't run if you're older than 60.
60s. I mean, I would agree with that philosophically.
Newsom's 58. We're good.
Newsom's 58? Yeah, don't do 60. Do 65. You can't start running.
I don't want people running who should be retiring. At 65, the average fucking person is retiring to go live on a farm up fucking north. I don't want these people running the country, man.
Someone pointed out, and I didn't realize, like, our average compared to the world leader average of the rest of the world. I just thought everyone did this. We are uniquely into our old people as presidents compared to, like, other than dictatorial.
Yeah, anyone that's has because people in our fucking country can live longer than 55.
Ooh.
Got him. Steven, who do you want to be, as of today, the
I don't even think about it. It's boring. I don't even care. Yeah. It's like so many years away, so far in the future. So much can happen between now and then.
Yeah, it's we're so a few Kristallnachts away, I think, from Trump.
It's like dangerously... Well, I'm now also worried about, like, the schedule of it. I guess they're still deciding on some of the races. I hope it's not like a year of fighting.
Well.
Anything else?
No, that's all for me. Anything for me? Primeline, do you want to... Say anything else to me?
No, I said everything I said.
You got to own Prime Mine. Shrimp ass.
Do you have any
Not really. I mean, this convo, what? How long has this convo gone on for?
So what?
Plus hours?
So what? Didn't you enjoy
you
the parts where you were part of it?
It's like,
were
you?
Hey,
you
here's a real question. I want you to be honest.
Precisely.
Here's a real question. I want you to be honest. Did you enjoy the parts you were part of?
No, it was fucking...
Liar.
It was pure suffering.
Liar, dude.
Right. Who's your football team?
I would appreciate your call-in more if you were like 10 times more concise.
Oh,
you know, I'm usually the concise guy who says like, "Oh, X person's not doing good," but I think this guy does a good job, and I think Chad is actually giving him bad rap. I don't know.
He's a yapper.
Thank you, Moon. Thank you. I think that good conversation complements everything else Steven does, debate-wise, research-wise. There needs to be kind of an exploratory, kind of like the digestion, the dreaming, where we instill all the things we learned in the day. Moon, Steven, great chat.
Be careful.
Have a good one.
See you guys next time. Bye.
Ciao.